Anatomy and Physiology, Gulf Coast State College. Today we're going to finish up the skeletal system with our discussions about the appendicular skeleton. In particular, we're going to take a look at the pelvic girdle and lower extremities. Hopefully you all have out in front of you either the outlines, your PowerPoint notes in PDF format, maybe the study questions, note cards, or whatever you're taking notes on. Remember, in addition, that the photographs I'm using in the skeletal system are high quality digital photos of the lab specimens. I'm really hoping that this type of presentation will allow you to do your very best in both the lab and the lecture. And ultimately, that's my goal, to give you the tools so that you can do your very best. This format also allows me to spend way more time than humanly possible in the lab and the lecture combined on this material. Let's begin with the real deal. This is a specimen you'll study in the lab. It's an anterior view of the pelvic girdle that we'll dive into shortly, but also on this slide as a refresher, some of our old friends, the inferior bones of the vertebral column, including the beautiful sacrum. Notice that bone is anchored very nicely into the pelvic girdle. This forms a firm foundation for our vertebral column. Please also remember the joint I want you to know between the sacrum and this hip bone is called the sacroiliac joint. On the weekends when I'm out drinking Pepsi with my friends or in the hospitals, you will hear this commonly called the SI joint. Now let's turn our attention to the pelvic girdle. Remember, root word girdle means to encircle. Pelvic does refer to the pelvic region. These are the bones that will attach the lower limbs to the axial skeleton. More root words. Pelvis means basin, and this is a basin for some of our abdominopelvic organs, and in a woman, it's potentially a basin for a baby. These bones in general are called either the hip bones, there's a right one and a left one. They're also called pelvic bones, and your book throws in a third name that I really don't care about. I'll mention it anyway. It's called the os coxae. Os, O-S, means bone, and coxae means hip. But I just mentioned that I don't use those terms os coxae in real life or on the test either. Notice that the two hip bones are joined anteriorly at this wedge of fibrocartilage you must know is called the pubic symphysis. More on that cool structure later. We're going to go ahead now and flip her around. That's the posterior view of the same thing. Here's our right hip bone, our left hip bone. There's the sacrum anchored in there very nicely. But we are big, bad A&P students, and we have to know much more than that. Here come the finer details. I love this picture, an anterior view of the real deal, showing the pelvic girdle with the right hip bone and the left hip bone. The story is, however, that each hip bone is actually made up of three individual bones. You should know that they typically fuse together in our early 20s. We have to know the name of each individual hip bone and the name and purpose of several parts on each of those bones. Let's start at the top, literally the most superior of the bones, shaded very nicely in a natural tan color. It is also the largest of the hip bones. Its name is the ilium. The only part of the ilium you're responsible for my course is this roughened crest-like structure on the top that some genius called the iliac crest. It really does look like the crest of a bird, and maybe that'll remind you that it sits on the top of the superior most hip bone. What's the purpose of the iliac crest? Notice it is roughened again, and it will serve for a site of muscle attachment. let's get clinical here, because this bone is often involved in injuries such as during football games, and the name for a bruise to the ilium is called a hip pointer. Typically, it gets bruised right up front here anteriorly, where there's a little projection kind of poking out there. Moving right along, here comes our second hip bone, shaded nicely in the natural tan color again. It is called the ischium. It is primarily located inferiorly. As a matter of fact, if we're sitting down right now, we are sitting on this bone, and that's one of my memorization techniques, because we sit on our ischiums. Yes, careful. And the only part of the bone you need to know for my course is this roughened area on the very bottom of the ischium that somebody called the ischial tuberosities. Remember, tuberosities are generally roughened areas of bone for muscle attachment, which is the case here. And now we are ready to move on to our last hip bone, shown gorgeously in this picture, shaded in the natural tan color. This bone, I would say, is located mostly anteriorly. This bone is called the pubis. Notice that the right pubis and the left pubis join anteriorly at a fibrocartilage structure called the pubic symphysis. How do I remember where these bones are located? Well, I think the name gives it away. Just use your common sense. You know where your pubic region is in general, so I remember that the pubis is the bone of the hip that's located anteriorly, because it's in the pubic region. Before we leave this slide, let me point out a couple of key structures, starting with this socket-like deal. Here it is on one hip bone, here's the socket on the other hip bone. It is going to form a joint with the head of the femur. It's another one of those ball and socket joints. Notice that the socket is generally facing outwards. The socket has a name, because we name everything in anatomy. Bear with me on this one. You may have to practice it in front of the mirror. It is called the, wait for it, acetabulum. Don't be afraid to say it at home. What does it mean in Greek? It means something like a wine cup. And I'm trying to think what kind of a sick freak hundreds of years ago who found this at the first autopsy would think of naming it such a thing. Interestingly, this is a point where all three of the hip bones will come together and fuse. We will see that on a color-coded photograph coming up later. Additionally, on this picture, I guess you were all noticing this big hole here, and on the other side, a name for a hole in anatomy is a foramen, and that is indeed what we have here. Specifically, this is called the obturator foramen. It is the largest foramen in the human body that tends to surface on the test sometimes. Believe it or not, as big as it is, very little passes through there. In general, it's closed with a membranous-like structure, but as always, stuff like vessels and nerves do get through there. You should know that there's a nerve that gets through there. Guess what some genius called it? The obturator nerve. And I remember the obturator nerve helps us to operate some of our thigh muscles that are located just below. That's easier for my pea brain to remember. For our course and for real life, it is important to understand the differences between the male and the female pelvis. Let's check it out. This is an anterior view of a male pelvis. How did I know that so quick? Am I smarter than anyone listening to this tape? No. Is it magic? No. I just look at some key features. Number one, check out this archway right here. Some genius call that the pubic arch. It is much more narrow in a male. It is less than 90 degrees. Then the other thing I look at is the opening I'm circling now in the pelvis. Remember, pelvis does mean a basin, and this is much smaller in a man as compared to a woman. Let's look at it. There is a female pelvis. Boom, I know right away because I look at the archway of bone called the pubic arch. It is much broader and bigger. It is greater than 90 degrees for sure. And look at the opening in this pelvis I'm circling. It is also significantly larger. Why? Just because someone decided to do it willy-nilly? No, like in anatomy and physiology, over and over, we will see the form matches the function. Yes, the pelvis is a basin for abdominal pelvic organs in both men and women. But in women, it's also a basin potentially for babies. And this design allows for childbirth to be a little bit easier. If that's the right word, I'm not sure. I want to point out furthermore that this pubic symphysis that joins the right and the left pubis during pregnancy due to hormonal changes, it softens up so that later in pregnancy the bones actually separate and widen again to allow an easier passageway for the baby to come out during childbirth. Don't you just love A&P when you hear stuff like that? Let's pluck out one of these bones individually and see what you got. Here is a specimen from the lab you should study in detail. I know, of course, it's a hip bone, but you got to know the three individual bones that make it up and the parts of those bones. Let's bust it down. I like to start here because it's the biggest of the hip bones and it's got this distinct bird-like crest on the top of it. If they say name this bone, you write down ilium. If they tag the crest and say name this structure, you say iliac crest. Of interest for my lecture course, this roughened area here forms part of a joint with a sacrum called the SI joint. Let's move to a different bone. I look down here, let's say it's tagged on the test, it's rounded. I remember that our bottoms are kind of rounded. We sit on our bottoms, and my memorization technique is I sit on my ischium, therefore I call it ischium, and I'm right every time on the test. We'll move forward to the last of the three bones and look at the distinctive visual clue. It's this flat edge. You know anteriorly in the pubic region, the bones called the pubis come together. That's the way I never miss this bone called the pubis. Let's not forget about the big hole because they might ask you that. Name the opening. Everyone calls it the obturator foramen. Where's the socket? Well, you don't see it here, so it must be on the other side facing the table, facing outwards, of course. Now we're ready to identify whether this is a right or a left bone. What's the top? Well, the crest is on the top, like the crest of the bird is on the top. What's on the bottom? Our rounded bottom, our ischium is on the bottom. What's the front? Our pubic region, the pubis bone with the flat edge is facing the front. I couldn't really do it in the lab because I couldn't balance it, but you have to imagine taking this bone in 3D, try to balance it on the bottom, on the ischium, on your table, face the flat edge of the pubis forward, and put the crest of the bird on the top. Where's the socket? Well, it's facing outwards. Then with some basic knowledge of anatomy, if you have that bone positioned that way, and what I do in lab is I take the hip bone and I try to place it either on my right side or my left side to make sure all those parts we just mentioned are in the proper direction and the sockets are facing out. If you did that with this bone, it could only possibly be and function as a right hip bone. Let's try this again. Here is another hip bone. What are the pieces parts? Come on now, here's the biggest one on the top with the crest. Bone called ilium. This part of this bone called the iliac crest. The rounded bottom we sit on is the ischium. The part in the front, this bone with the flat edge located anteriorly, is called the pubis. The big hole, of course, is called the obturator foramen. This is the roughened area that forms a joint with the sacrum called the SI joint. Once again, you can't see the socket. It must be there for on the other side, facing outward, like it's supposed to be. Now, is it a right bone or a left bone? Do the same thing. I couldn't balance it in lab, but you would have to try to balance it on this rounded bottom. Or even better, what I do is I take it. Knowing now, top from bottom, front from back, and sockets face out, I would grab this thing and put it on one hip and put it on my other hip region and see how it could possibly work in the human body. And you would find out that this could only be, it could only function as a left hip bone. Let's try this one more time. Here's another hip bone. Let's break it down. Hopefully, you'll identify this biggest bone on the top with the crest as the ilium. If they tag the crest, you call it iliac crest. Our rounded bottom, you know we sit on our ischiums. Easy to name that bone. We move up front here to the bone with the straight edge on it. You call it the pubis. Now you know top, you know bottom, and you know the front. Furthermore, on this picture, let's not forget the hole. Of course, everyone always gets that. It's the obturator foramen. And now we finally see a socket. The socket is called the acetabulum, and you know it's facing outwards or laterally. With all those tips, tricks, and directions in your mind, although I was not able to successfully balance this and take the picture at the same time in lab, you should pick this up and play with it. Flip it, flop it, twist it, turn it, hold it up to each of your hip regions if you wish, and you will see that if you do that, the only way this bone you're looking at could possibly function properly in the human body would be to act as a left hip bone. I know these 2D pictures are tough to get the 3D perspective on. That's why the lab experience is so important. I believe this next drawing, which is color-coded from your textbook, will help in that respect. Let's do some review. This is a lateral view of a right hip bone. This largest bone located superiorly with the crest on the top, you will call the ilium. If they tag the crest-like structure, which serves as a point of muscle attachment, you will call it the iliac crest. Let's go down below in red. You know we sit on our bottoms. Bottoms are rounded. We sit on our ischiums. You will all call this bone the ischium. If they tag the roughened area on the bottom of the bottom, which also serves for muscle attachment, you will call it the ischial tuberosities. Anteriorly, in a light purple or lilac color, again with sort of a flat edge to it, you will call it the pubis. It is in the pubic region. The big hole, obturator foramen, should be a gimme on the test. Then the socket, we call it acetabulum. Practice the spelling and pronunciation at home. And notice, of course, this is cool because it shows you that this is the location where all three bones fuse together in our early 20s. I've asked a question again at the bottom of the slide. What is a hip pointer? You should know that in general, it just means a bruise to the ilium, often happens in football injuries, and it most often happens here to this structure labeled in blue, if you care. That completes our discussion of the pelvic girdle. We are now ready to march our way down the lower limb using this beautiful picture from your textbook. It's an excellent summary slide. This is an anterior view of the right lower extremity and a wonderful slide for overview purposes. We just finished with the hip bones and now we're ready to progress from proximal to distal, that is from superior to inferior, looking at those bones one at a time in this order displayed. But first, some basic terminology, just like we did in the upper extremity. This region of the lower limb I'm circling now is called the thigh. There's only one bone in there called the femur. This region below I'm circling now is called the leg. Let's break it down. Starting at the top with this bone. This is the only bone in the thigh. It is the largest, longest, heaviest, and strongest bone in the human body. That kind of sort of sounds like something you ought to know. Specifically, we're looking at a low mag anterior view of a left femur. And you guessed it, this is one of those right versus left bones you must be able to identify. As always, we'll start with the low mag view and look at the parts. Then we will zoom in on the appropriate sections so you can see the fine details. Let's start superiorly and medially with this ball-like structure. Remember, balls always plug in or point in medially. That is key. But do not call this the ball. You will call this the head of the femur. It makes a joint with, that is, it articulates with, the socket in the hip bone that you know is called the acetabulum. Where there is a head in anatomy, there is a neck. This is a very important neck. I am tracing over it now. You will call it the neck of the femur. And it is important clinically. You will have patients come to you and say, I broke my hip. When they tell you that, you really don't know what bone or bones that they broke. Often what they really mean is they broke the neck of their femur. Furthermore, they will tell you, I fell down and broke my hip. When in reality, especially in your elderly female patients with weak bones from osteoporosis, the neck of the femur will break first and then they will fall. These injuries, by the way, are very serious. If they survive the injury, even the repair of the injury, they may succumb to other things while in the hospital or during their recovery period, such as infections, pneumonia, blood clots. Very serious injuries. I can never get past this point without talking about my grandmother. My grandmother was mowing her lawn all the way up till she was in her 80s, and she had those old lawn mowers with two wheels, one off to each side, with the rotating blades in between. No power, nothing. It was a push mower. She was able to do that all the way up till she fell and broke her hip. She really did fall and break her hip. She was walking across a wooden bridge. It gave way. She fell through, landed in a rocky creek below, and broke her hip. She survived the injury. Wasn't able to mow her lawn anymore, but lived until she was 102 years old. Now that you know a little bit about my grandmother, let's talk about this bone. My arrow now is on another important part you must know. This is called the greater trochanter. Why? Trochanter refers to a big, hunky, chunky, meaty piece of bone for muscle attachment. Greater refers to the fact that it is bigger and or above the lesser one, which it is. This is an important landmark that you will all use. You will palpate it, you will feel it, and be trained properly how to give intramuscular injections in the right place without causing nerve damage to your patients. Let's march our way down inferiorly and look at the distal end of this bone. I always like to think big picture. The big picture is, I hope you get the feeling that this looks like it's part of your knee joint. And it is. If I were to look at my knee right now, I see this big rounded hunk that forms the front of my knee. Sure enough, this is rounded in the front and this is the top half of my knee joint. The pieces we must know are the pieces down below here that I'm tracing right now. These are large, smooth mounds of bone, once again called condyles, that help to form a joint. The one on this side is the medial condyle. How do I instantly know? It goes back to our key information that you all know. Balls always plug in. Balls are always pointing medial. That's key. So I know this is the medial condyle because there's the head of the femur. And this other round, smooth, big knuckle of bone that forms part of our knee joint must therefore absolutely be the lateral condyle. Now that we know some parts, how can we tell if this is a right or a left bone? It's easy. Same as we always been doing it using my bag of tricks. Even my third grader knows this is the top of the femur where the ball is. Therefore, this must be the bottom of the femur. Furthermore, when I look at the bottom of the femur, I can tell the front from the back because I know that's half of my knee joint. If I look at my knee joint right now, it's rounded in the front and scooped out in the back. When you examine these in 3D, you will see this is rounded in the front and it's scooped out. There's a divot. Yeah, there's a fossa in the back. Then the final key is balls always plug in the human body. They're always pointing medially. Now, with all that, if you take this bone, like I like to do in lab, and hold it up to the appropriate region of the body, in this case the thigh, and I line it up top, bottom, front, back, with the ball plugging in, it can only be one thing. It can only work and function properly in the human body as a left femur. On the next slide, we're going to take another look at a femur. Going to check out a posterior view, review some old parts, look at some new parts, and see if you could tell me if it's a right or a left bone. Here it is, a real human bone from the lab. I point to this ball-like structure, you all call it the head of the femur. Just below it, this constricted area, the neck of the femur. Big, hunky, meaty chunk of bone for muscle attachment, also, again, a landmark you'll use to properly place IM injections, that is the greater trochanter. We go down here, inferiorly, yes, below the greater, is a smaller chunk of bone. This is the lesser trochanter, appropriately named because it is smaller and below the greater one. Then, something I really like, so much I have a red arrow on it. Look at this long line, this roughened ridge running straight down the backside of the femur. That is the linea aspera. Linea means line, aspera means rough. Here again, we have a rough ridge, you guessed it, for muscle attachment. Some very powerful thigh muscles are going to firmly anchor to that puppy. Let's go distally on the inferior end of the femur. That's the knee joint. Remember, this is the top half of our knee joint. We see smooth knuckles of bone. Smooth knuckles of bone that form a joint you know are called condyles. I absolutely know my arrow right now is on the medial condyle because the head, the ball, is always medial. Therefore, the one on the other side must be the lateral condyle. Okay, so is this a right bone or a left bone? You do it the same way. You know that this is the top where the ball is. You know that's the bottom where the knee is. You know it's the back now because look how it's all scooped out in 3D. This will become painfully obvious. There's a fossa there. You know balls always plug in. So we're looking at a posterior view of a femur, which if you hold it up to the appropriate region of your body and play with it and position it to try to make it function, the only way this could work in a human body is if it is a right femur. Time to zoom in and get a nice detailed look at some of these parts. This is an anterior view of a proximal left femur. Name this ball-like structure, clearly that's the head. Below that, this constricted area, you will call it the neck. Big chunky meat of bone there, that has to be the greater trochanter. A little piece of the lesser trochanter visible on this slide as well. Let's flip her around because you get a nicer view of the trochanters. This is a posterior view of the proximal left femur. Once again, ball is the head, constricted area below it is the neck, big chunky meat of bone, gotta call it greater trochanter. The littler one down here, easy for me to say, has to be the lesser trochanter. Get ready for your next slide, because I got a pretty picture from your textbook, and I was playing with my PowerPoints again. All eyes on this, or you'll miss it. Boom, there it is. Yeah, that's advanced PowerPoint technique. Don't try that at home. You might hurt yourself. This is a medial view of the proximal end of the right femur. Of course, you already knew all that. Especially, you know it's a medial view because you're looking at the head of the femur, and you know balls always point or plug in medially. The key thing I want to focus on is something new on this slide. This little dimple in the head of the femur has a name you must know for my lecture course. It is called the fovea capitis. Fovea just means a pit, and the root word capit means head. So it's a pit in the head of the femur. Why do I point it out? Because there is a ligament attached there that some genius called the ligament of the head of the femur, and it attaches to the acetabulum. Thankfully, that only leaves me one new question to answer on this slide. What is the clinical significance of a fracture of the shaft of the femur? Yeah, what if we break this bad boy in the middle? That's big time. Why? Because remember, this is the largest, longest, heaviest, strongest bone in the human body. It takes a tremendous amount of force to snap this puppy in the shaft. I used to hate to see those injuries. I don't like to use the word hate, but it applies here. And if you've ever seen one, you know what I'm talking about. These are potentially life-threatening injuries. If you see this big bone snapped and poking through the skin, I know your attention's on that and you've got to do your life-saving therapy there, but you better understand that these patients often have multiple other serious life-threatening internal injuries going on at the same time that you must diagnose and treat. Of course, you're going to repair the fracture itself. They may not survive these injuries. They are potentially deadly. You can bleed out from ruptured blood vessels. You can actually die from clots. A lot of you are thinking blood clots, but actually they can die from a fat clot. That's right, in the middle of the shaft of these bones, in adults, there's fat. It's called yellow marrow. And those little globules or lumps of fat can meander around and find their ways into open ends of blood vessels, and they can die from a fat clot. It's called a fat embolus. I'm not kidding. You can do an internet search on that. Well, let me try to lighten things up here a little bit. When I was growing up, my dad, he served us food like liver and beef tongue and chicken. We ate lots of chicken. The family dog, trust me, ended up getting a lot of that food underneath the table. Anyway, when I was eating chicken, I thought I was done with my chicken, and he would look at me and say, "Hey, Lee, there's still a lot of meat left on that bone." Anybody else's dad do that? And just to prove a point then, he would grab it off my plate. Even if there was no meat left, he would chew on it. He would even chew on the end of the bone, you know, where like the cartilage and the tendons were. And then he would break the bone in the middle just to prove he don't waste anything and suck the fat out of the shaft of the bone. Anybody else's dad do that? Please tell me it's not just me. I want to try to think I had a semi-normal childhood. But that just helps remind me, by the way, that there is fat, there is yellow marrow inside the shaft of long bones in adults. True story, by the way. Let's get back to reality here. This is a high mag view anterior of the distal left femur. In English, the big picture is we're looking at the top half of our left knee joint. These smooth knuckles of bone in general that form joints are called condyles. And since I'm telling you this is a left femur, this must be the medial condyle. You would be able to confirm that in lab by seeing it was on the same side as the head of the femur. And this must be the lateral condyle of the femur. We will see shortly that these condyles will form a joint with the lower half of the knee, which are the medial and lateral condyles of the big bone in the leg called the tibia. let's flip it around and look at a posterior view. This is the distal left femur again. This would have to be, therefore, the medial condyle. You would be able to confirm that in lab by seeing that the head of the femur was on the same side, making this the lateral condyle over to this side. Notice also, I know I'm looking at the back of a knee because it's scooped out, it's cupped out. There's a fossa there, just as if you were to examine the back of your own knee right now, which I'm not telling you to do, of course. Well, we can't do the knee without talking about the kneecap, so there it is. But you can't call it the kneecap anymore, or I'll just laugh on the test, but you won't get any points. Maybe a smiley face on your paper. You must all now call this the patella. This bone is unique in a couple of ways. First of all, look at its shape. It's sort of a chunky bone in 3D, and to me, it looks like a heart. That's my visual, looks like one of those hearts you would draw on a Valentine. I know not everyone's seeing that, but come up with something that works for you. The other thing that's unique from a physiology standpoint that you must know is this is called a sesamoid bone. That's spelled in my notes, don't worry. What does that mean? This is a bone that develops inside of a tendon, and that is rather unique in the human body. This bone articulates with, forms a joint with, the femoral condyles. What's the function? What's the purpose of the patella? Well, together with its tendons and ligaments, it helps to protect our knee, it helps to stabilize the knee joint, it helps to position things properly in the knee joint, and gives us strength through leverage. Yes, the kneecap is important. How about in a testing situation? You think this would be easy, right? You're going to identify it right away. Well, it should be. But I'm going to show you a slide where some students mess up. How do you like that? Ooh, look at those two bones. Yeah, maybe some similarities, but come on, don't flip them on test day. Over to your left, that's your chunky heart-shaped kneecap. You call it patella. Over to your right, an old friend of yours. Yes, it's flat, it's part of the breastplate, but more importantly, it's got the squashed M on the top. That's the manubrium. Please do not flip-flop them and miss what I would consider to be free points on the test day. Let's have some fun, put it all together by looking at a knee joint. This gives us the opportunity to review some old friends, introduce some new friends, and see how it all works. This is an anterior view of the left knee joint. This bone here, of course, you will all call the patella. Notice it articulates with both femoral condyles. I'm circling the distal end of the femur. This would have to be the lateral condyle, and this would have to be the medial condyle of the femur. How'd I know that? Because our new friends down below tell us that. Here are the two leg bones. The big one is the tough tibia. It is the weight-bearing bone of the leg. This little flimsy one off to the lateral side is the non-weight-bearing bone. It is the fibula. So I see the little flimsy bone on the lateral side. I know that these are the lateral condyles. Let's take a look at the lower half of the knee joint formed by the condyles of the tibia. You would have to therefore now name this the lateral condyle of the tibia because it's on the side of the fibula, and on the opposite side, this would have to be the medial condyle of the tibia. Note how the matching condyles of the femur and the tibia come together to form our knee joint. Let's go clinical again. I want you to know about something called runner's knee because it's very common. Runner's knee occurs when the patella and its attached tendons and ligaments do not track properly in this central position. It tends to slide off to one side or another, and that tends to cause discomfort. This is a syndrome also technically known as patellofemoral stress syndrome. Let's solidify our knowledge of the knee joint by flipping this around and taking a look at a gorgeous posterior view of the same left knee joint. And now we can see the medial and lateral condyles of the femur articulating very nicely with the medial and lateral condyles of the tibia. In addition, we have the flimsy fibula off to the lateral side. It is articulating with the lateral condyle of the tibia. The knee joint is so interesting and complex and often involved in injuries. I thought you would enjoy some additional views. This is a lateral view of the left knee joint showing many of the same things. And you knew immediately it was lateral because you're seeing the flimsy fibula that is on the lateral side of the leg. I'll throw in a medial view as well for your viewing pleasure. But now it's time to progress distally and further examine in detail the bones of the leg, beginning with this low magnification anterior view of a left tibia. And you guessed it, this is another one of those bones where you have to be able to tell us if it's a right bone or a left bone. As always, under low mag, I'll start by naming some parts, then we will zoom in to see the details very nicely. How did I know right away this was the tibia? There's only two bones in the leg, and the tibia with a T is the tough one with a T. It is the weight-bearing bone of the leg, as compared to the fibula, which is flimsy and the non-weight-bearing bone of the leg. I never mix up the two leg bones. Believe it or not, on this bone, I want to begin on the inferior or distal end because where my arrow is now is a critical piece, a critical landmark, because it is always located on the medial surface of the tibia. This meaty, chunky, hook-like piece of bone has a name. It is called the medial malleolus. Why? Medial, because it's always on the medial side. Malleolus, why? That means a hammer in Greek. And I guess if my teenager were misbehaving, I could use that to hammer her over the head. No, not really. I'm just saying that for fun and maybe to help you remember things. But you must first check out that medial malleolus when you see a tibia. We are now ready to progress superiorly and examine the proximal end of the tibia. The big picture is, this is the lower half of the knee joint. It's easy to name the condyles now. This must be the medial condyle because it's always on the same side as the medial malleolus, leaving this as the lateral condyle. Another structure on the anterior surface of the tibia here is a roughened mound of bone. It has a name. It's called the tibial tuberosity. Why? Tibial, because it's on the tibia. Tuberosity, because it's a roughened mound of bone for muscle and tendon attachment. With this information and our prior knowledge in hand, it should be easy to tell if this is a right or a left bone. Once again, even my third grader knows this is the top of the bone, and since we know this is part of our knee joint, I can tell it's the front of the bone because the front of my knee bows forwards right about where that tibial tuberosity is. Then the bottom end of the bone has our critical feature. The medial malleolus, of course, always has to line up medially in our body. Now, I take this bone, either I'm envisioning it in my mind's eye, or better yet, in the lab, I'm holding it up to my leg. I'm putting this at the top, I'm putting this at the bottom, and I'm making sure that hook-shaped thing called the medial malleolus is on the inner surface of my ankle. And if I do that, this can only possibly be one bone in the human body. It must be a left tibia. Before I leave this slide, I'm going to go clinical on you again. Want to talk about bone fractures. Your textbook says this is the most frequently fractured long bone in the human body. Don't get me wrong though, of the two bones in the leg, the tibia is the tough one. And when the leg is fractured, it's really not uncommon that they both get broken at the same time. It's time to zoom in and check out the finer details. Here's a high mag photo of the same left tibia. It's an anterior view of the proximal portion. With that information in mind, this still has to be the medial condyle, but don't worry, in lab you're going to have the whole bone and the medial malleolus will be down here to tell you that. This is still the lateral condyle, and very nicely we see the tibial tuberosity for muscle attachment. Let's flip around, look at the same thing from a posterior perspective. This still must be the medial condyle. Again, don't get nervous, because in lab you're going to have the whole bone and the medial malleolus will be on the same side, and this has to be the lateral condyle. Let's finish up the tibia by going down inferiorly and checking out the distal end of this bone. There it is, an anterior view of the left tibia. Focus your attention, please, on this big, meaty, hook-shaped piece of bone. You should all grab onto it in lab and get a feel for it. It is called the medial malleolus, and as you have already come to realize, it is the absolute critical key piece of the tibia that tells you a whole lot about this bone. But let's not forget about the other bone in the leg. We certainly don't want to ignore this bone called the fibula. It is the flimsy bone of the leg. It is the non-weight-bearing bone of the leg. It's located on the outside or lateral part of the leg. You can envision how someone getting tackled in a football type of an injury can easily have this bone broken along with the tibia. We will do some of the parts and then zoom in on them, high magnification, to see the pretty details. Let's begin at the top. The proximal end of the fibula has a piece you need to know, and it is called the head. That's nice for my pea brain. The head of the fibula is located on top of the fibula. If we go down low at the distal end, there is a more flattened piece called the lateral malleolus. Lateral, why? Because we'll see it's on the lateral portion of the ankle, and malleolus again means hammer. I can't leave this slide without going clinical on you again, because someone who took this course years ago said, I'm not just taking this to get an A, I'm taking this to help people. And they were listening and understanding to what they were learning and said, now wait a minute, if this is the flimsy bone, the non-weight bearing bone, maybe I can use that to my advantage. And people do, in a process called bone grafting. Since this is a non-weight-bearing bone, you could actually take pieces of it and graft it in other areas of the body where it's needed for structure or support or to rebuild parts of the body. I encourage you all to do an internet search. The topic of bone grafting to me is absolutely fascinating, and you could have thought of that with the knowledge you already have. If you do ever think of something like that, by the way, please cut me in. About 1%. Now time for our high magnification detailed view, starting with this proximal end of the fibula. Of course, if I tell you that, you would all call this the head, because you know that the head's on the top, the head is superior. But in lab, trust me, it's much harder than that in an examination situation. So I have a memorization technique. What I do in lab is I grab the fibula about right here, and I look at the head of the fibula and I say, that kind of looks like an ice cream cone to me. I'm pretty sure if I put some ice cream right there, I can get it to stay there long enough where I can eat it. You get it? The head of the fibula feeds the head? Ice cream cone? Anybody out there besides me? All right, I know it seems silly now, but trust me, I bet it's going to help you later. Let's check out the distal end of the fibula. Here it comes. This is what we call an AP, or an anterior posterior view. English, we're looking at the distal fibula edge on. And I do the same thing. I grab the fibula about right here and I look at this thing and I say, I can't get any ice cream on there. Ice cream would have no hope of staying on there at all. It would slip right off. There's no way I could feed my head. Therefore, it can't be the head. It has to be the only other piece on my list. It must be the lateral malleolus. On the next slide, I have it oriented in a more proper position. This is a lateral view of the distal fibula. This is the lateral malleolus. No ice cream. Once again, I think it's beautiful to put it all together, to review some old friends, introduce some new players, and see how it works. I have a gorgeous anterior view of a left ankle joint. Let's look at our old friends first. Here's the distal end of the tibia and our key landmark, the medial malleolus, which helps form part of the ankle joint. As a matter of fact, I'm not telling you to do this, but if you were to look and or feel that bump on the inner medial surface of your ankle, what you're mostly feeling is the medial malleolus. Likewise, if we follow the flimsy fibula downwards, at its distal end is the lateral malleolus, forming also part of the ankle joint. And if you were to do this, and I'm not telling you to, but if you feel or look at that bump on the outer lateral surface of your ankle, what you're mostly feeling is the lateral malleolus. You see, you actually learned something useful today, and you could go home and tell mommy and daddy. Time to take a look at some new players. We're beginning to see some of the bones of the foot, specifically the proximal portion of the foot, which is called the ankle. The ankle bones have a name. They are called tarsals, and there are 7 tarsal bones. Please do not mix these up with the bones in the wrist. I never mix it up, because tarsals start with a T and toe starts with a T. The tarsals are where the toes are. Unfortunately, for our studying pleasure, we have to know 2 tarsal bones by name. The first one we could kind of see right here is the tarsal on the top. And it starts with a T. It's called the talus. The talus is the tarsal bone on the top. It has a smooth dome-shaped surface that we will see in the lab and on some photos coming up shortly. I want you to pay attention to the beautiful joint between the talus and the tibia. And check this out. Remember, the tibia is the weight-bearing bone of the leg. So think about this joint. The total weight of the body is teeter-tottering on the talus. And that's another memorization technique I use. It's a T tongue twister. Next comes a lateral view of the left ankle joint. We can see the lateral malleolus very nicely. We can see the ankle bones called tarsals. And most importantly on this slide, the purpose is to show you the other tarsal bone you must know by name. It's called the calcaneus. In English, it's the heel bone, but you can't call it the heel bone. You got to call it the calcaneus. It's the biggest tarsal bone, and if you look at the back of it in lab very nicely, you can see it's got a big, round, roughened surface. And that's one of the ways I remember. It's my heel bone. I mean, if I were to take my socks and shoes off right now, and don't worry, I won't, and look at the back of my heel, it's kind of round and it's kind of rough. You'll see in lab that the calcaneus, the heel bone, it's big and round and rough here. Never miss it, please. Moving on to a medial view, we see the medial malleolus also forming part of the ankle joint, and it's forming that beautiful connection with the other bone you must know, the top tarsal bone called the talus. Remember, the total weight of the body teeter-totters on the talus. This allows us to summarize as well as learn the remaining bones of the foot. First, my arrow is circling around the ankle. This is the proximal portion of the foot, and you know those bones are called tarsals. There are 7 of them. The two you need to know by name are, number one, the talus is on the top. It's got a smooth dome-shaped surface to form a joint with the tibia. And you now know that the total weight of the body teeter-totters on the talus. The only other tarsal bone you have to know by name is the largest one. It's the heel bone that you must call the calcaneus. Very similar to what we did in the hand, beyond the tarsals are the metatarsals. These five bones form the sole of the foot. They're also numbered from 1 to 5. 1 being the bone that is proximal to the big toe, number 5 being the metatarsal that is proximal to the baby toe. So if you are asked in anatomical position, if you look down your foot right now, the big toe is medial, the baby toe is lateral. So the metatarsals are numbered from medial to lateral if anybody asks you. As far as the foot goes, we're going to finish with the phalanges, and it's the same old story. These are the bones of the digits. There are a total of 14 of them. All digits have 3 except for the big toe, which only has 2 of them. The arches of the right foot. Shown here in blue, don't worry, you don't have to know the individual names. Here's one going crossways called the transverse arch. Here's some going longways called the longitudinal arches. Well, what are they and what are they for? The arches are made out of tough connective tissue, meaning they're made out of tendons and ligaments. What are their functions? You should write this down. They help us with things like balance, support, strength, and leverage, and they act as a shock absorber. An example I could give you of their significance is if you know anybody who's flat-footed. They have troubles with their feet. They have troubles with balance. They have trouble with doing certain physical activities. They get discomfort. So yes, the arches are important. I love the arches. I want to end this section by giving you a quiz. I'm going to show you several bones that students tend to miss if they don't do the right amount of preparation. But I don't want any of my students to miss this on the test. Here comes your quiz. There's 3 bones. Can you name them? You should be able to just like that. At first glance, you're thinking, oh my gosh, they look all the same. Not really. Remember, take home 1 visual clue on every bone so you never miss it. Let's start to the right. Here's a U. There's only 1 bone with a U. It starts with a U. Must be the ulna. Slide over to the center bone. It's got the perfectly round suction cup head. Only the radius had that. Don't miss it on the test. Slide over to the left. You're saying, oh, wait a minute. No U, no suction cup. It's got nothing. And that's my clue. It's got nothing. It's the fibula. It's the flimsy, featureless fibula. When I see it's got nothing, I know it's the fibula. In reality, you should be able to tell this is the lateral malleolus and this is the head. But I'm just telling you, on first glance, on that first practical lab test you'll take called the bone test, you really have to have your visuals down. First, off to the right, there's your U telling you that this bone is the ulna. In the middle, we got the perfectly round suction cup head, only seen on the radius. Finally, to your left, the flimsy, relatively featureless fibula. But if you look really closely, this is where I grabbed the fibula before and said, hey, I could put a little ice cream on there and make an ice cream cone. That is the head of the fibula. Please get this right. One more to test you. Come on now. Bone to the right, U for ulna, bone in the middle, round, perfect suction cup head for radius, and then the other end of the flimsy, featureless fibula. This happens to be the lateral malleolus, right? No ice cream. Call this the fibula. That will end it for us, folks. I hope I've given you all the tools you need to ace the bone material in both lab and lecture. See you in the next segment.